Back, I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ross Eisenbray, who is the Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute and a former Commissioner of the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission. Prior to joining the Economic Policy Institute, he worked for many years as a staff attorney and legislative director in the U.S. House of Representatives and as a committee counsel in the U.S. Senate. He served as a policy director of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration from 1999 until 2001 and has testified numerous times in the House of Representatives and the Senate and has written scores of articles, issue briefs, and policy memos on a wide range of labor issues. And he has an article at CNN, What Bled Detroit Dry? It's Not Pensions. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ross Eisenbray.
Thank you, Ian.
And I've tried to cover what's happened in Detroit, and most of the press coverage has been about how the municipal workers have had it too good and that they have to take a hit on their pensions, and maybe we should sell off our art collection, etc. But until your article came along, there's been in CNN, there's been very little about the real issues, which is how did Detroit got into this mess in the first place, and who's going to benefit from the bankruptcy? Who's first in line? And guess who's first in line? Wall Street banks and bondholders are at the front of the payment line, while city residents, police officers, firefighters, and other public employees are left in the rear, collecting only pennies on the dollar. So that's the basic headline, right?
That's right. And the judge hasn't decided how he's going to divide up all of Detroit's debts and who will get repaid and who won't yet. But the fundamental decision to put the workers' pensions into this pot and to put them at risk, I think, was wrong. It was wrong as a matter of law, but it's also, I think, wrong morally, because out of all the people who have contributed to the problems in Detroit, the workers who provided services, who looked after the children who were in foster homes or who worked in the hospitals or taught school or were the police and fire in one of the scariest cities, in North America, rushing out to fight fires in Detroit with people shooting at them, that those people should lose their pensions after working for 35 years, in the case of the average public employee, and maybe less, 20 or 25 years for the police and firefighters, is just wrong. Their pensions are not excessive, and these are people who already did the work. I mean, they didn't just lend money to the city. They lent their whole lives, 25, 30 years of hard work, and now the city manager is saying we'll pay them 20 cents on the dollar for their pensions. That, to me, is immoral.
And these pensions are mostly $19,000 a year, and the top is $30,000 a year for police and firefighters.
No, some will make more than that, but the average is $19,000 for the general employees, and for police and fire, the average is $30,000. But the police and firefighters don't get Social Security. That's all they get. So it really isn't excessive. I don't think anybody can fairly say that after risking their lives for decades for the city, that that's an excessive pension.
And meanwhile, Wall Street banks have saddled Detroit with $1.6 billion in loan deals that have been very profitable for Wall Street. And the banks have already extracted $300 million from Detroit to terminate these interest rate swaps. And they're now poised to collect another $300 million in additional windfalls because they're at the front of the queue in the bankruptcy.
Yeah, and the deals that were made are really kind of extraordinary. That there's a great piece that was published by Demos that goes into great detail about the debt swaps and the sort of very fancy financing that went into helping pay some of the pension obligations. The city was under the impression, they believed, that they could borrow money at a low rate and invest it at a higher rate of interest and actually make money that would help them pay off their pension obligations, and instead the deals were structured in a way that was very risky, and all of the risks went wrong. So the city ended up paying hundreds of millions of dollars that it was hoping to avoid. You know, it was hoping actually to make money on the deal, and it ended up paying out these huge costs to various financial institutions, Wall Street banks, and regional banks as well. They made these deals, unfortunately, like just before the crash, just before the Great Depression, or the Great Recession hit. They made these deals that were dependent on the economy doing well.
So tell me then about the people that did this deal, this bankruptcy deal. You have a very conservative, anti-union governor in Rick Snyder, and he appointed Kevin Orr as the unelected emergency manager to preside over Detroit's fate. And he, Orr, is a former corporate bankruptcy lawyer. Is that
right? That's all true. That's all true. Yeah, the state has the state of Michigan, which is at this point a red state, has a very hostile relationship with the city of Detroit. And this is of long standing, even when the state was more democratic. The great balance of the state looked with hostility at Detroit, which was overwhelmingly black for the last 20 or 30 years. It's been a majority African-American city. They have made deals with the city that were, frankly, reneged on. So the previous governor, Governor Engler, two governors ago, made a deal with the city of Detroit that if the city cut its tax rate, essentially in half, the state would provide more revenue sharing. And at first, they kept for a couple of years, they kept to this deal, and then they reneged on it. So the city reduced its tax revenue, hoping to get, with an understanding that it would get a big increase in tax revenue from the state, and the state didn't deliver. So Detroit went into the Great Recession with hundreds of millions of dollars missing from its budget that it had to make up by borrowing, by slashing city services. So it was already in bad shape. Then we get Governor Snyder, who is anti-union, as you say, and very unfriendly to Detroit, who helped put in place the emergency manager law that put Kevin Orr in control of the city. He then cut the revenue sharing even more by another $67 million. So he's squeezing the city's budget and then driving them into bankruptcy. It's almost, you know, like the orphan, you know, who's killed his parents and then, you know, asks for mercy because he's an orphan. It's the state, you know, that drove Detroit, helped drive Detroit into bankruptcy, and then then they ask a federal judge to take away the pensions of the workers who have given their lives to the city. It's a terrible situation.
And it seems that the press have faithfully parroted both Governor Rick Snyder and Kevin Orr's notion that Detroit is saddled with $18 billion in debt. Now, that figure has been challenged by somebody that's apparently a former Goldman Sachs investment banker. So walk us through that,
if you want. Okay. Well, lots of people have challenged that because I think it's both not true in some cases and shaky in others. For example, the part of this debt is said to be $3.5 billion for pension liabilities. But the actuary for the city, for the pension funds, says that it's less than $1 billion. Well, who's right? This depends. You actually can't know for 30 years who's right because it depends on what the investments actually make. So the city's pension funds, if they make their historical 7.5-8% returns, or 8.5% returns, the pension liabilities are $1 billion. If they make much less, if they do much more poorly than they have over the last 40 years, then it could be $3.5 billion. But, you know, the judge said, I don't have to decide that. It doesn't matter for the bankruptcy. And in fact, that's true, because the fact of the matter is that how much the city owes is less important than what its cash flow is. But there's another example, $5 billion, a little more for debt to the Water and Sewer Agency. But this is an agency who only a quarter of its business is in the city of Detroit. It's actually a regional water and sewer agency. And so to apply all of its debt to the city of Detroit is obviously wrong. It's fundamentally wrong. That debt should have been calculated at something closer to $1.5 billion. So you can go through the city's, the Kevin Orr's pleadings and find things that almost seem fraudulent like this. And the judge ultimately said, well, I don't have to decide this right now. My only question is, should the city be in bankruptcy? And he said, yes, because it's not meeting its payments on a cash flow basis. And that's something the state, instead of putting the city into bankruptcy, could solve by providing revenue sharing or even lending money to the city at a low interest rate that it could repay over time.
So given that this governor, this conservative Republican governor, doesn't want to do that, what's his motive? Why does he want to destroy this city?
I think that part of it is that it's been a bastion of Democratic politics, and he's trying to weaken a Democratic stronghold. He hates the unions. I mean, he is the governor who signed the right to work law for the state of Michigan, which was a huge blow to unions and shows where Snyder's heart really is. So even though the city has been cutting back on services for a long time, this is his opportunity to really slash wages, to basically break the union's power in Detroit.
So this is obviously, in a macroeconomic sense, this is really, it seems to me, to be a part of this sort of war on the middle class, the downsizing of the American middle class. Because in many ways, Detroit, through the sort of golden age of American manufacturing, when the United States was a social democracy from 1947 to 1977, so many people who got union jobs in Detroit were taken from poverty, a lot of them in the South, into a comfortable middle class life. So is this a part of the overall, this sort of feudalization of the United States, where we are becoming a plantation economy, where the oligarchs are the only winners and the middle class is downsized and everybody is scrambling around on a minimum wage, hoping for handouts?
Well, I do agree with that overall analysis. In this case, we have workers who are clearly middle class, people who have been making the civil servants whose pensions are directly under the gun here are people who, at $19,000 a year, you would barely call that middle class. If that's their income in retirement, that's really not much of a $30,000 pension for a fire worker, a firefighter or a police officer is I would say, a middle-class retirement income. And they're being told that that's too much, that we're going to cut it by as much as 80%. That will impoverish them if the judge ultimately does that. And so you have a choice here. You have the most deserving people who are having their, very modest incomes destroyed, and for whom? For very undeserving people who, in one view, trick the city into taking on these debt swaps and very complicated financing schemes that either the city didn't understand, or there's actually a view that, that people in the city did understand, and then they left, the ones who negotiated it, left and went to work for the financial industry, and, you know, are got their reward by being hired by financial firms after they left the city. So it's a, yes, the people who are in the 1% are doing very well here in the financial industry from the city of Detroit, while the most deserving people, the working people, are being crushed.
Well, Ross Eisenbray, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Well, thanks for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Ross Eisenbray, who's the Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute and a former commissioner of the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission. Prior to joining the Economic Policy Institute, he worked for many years as a staff attorney and legislative director in the United States House of Representatives and as a committee counsel in the U.S. Senate. He served as policy director of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration from 1999 until 2001, and he has an article at CNN, What Bled Detroit Dry? It's Not Pensions. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and recording engineer Alan Barker. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.